Welcome to Unyielded, thriving no matter what. In a world of constant change and challenges, it can seem hard to keep up, no matter how hard we run. Yet we all know those people who seem to handle everything with grace and grit. Seemingly, nothing throws them off their game. They are engaged in what matters most to them, they are achieving the success they desire. In other words, they are creating the life they love to live, no matter what challenges and surprises show up. We call them Unyielded. My name is Bobby Kaler, and I'm your host, and I'm so excited to be on this journey with you. I mentioned that it's a journey, and you might find yourself anywhere along that path. You may be starting out, you may be mid-career, or considering your next career. You could be an entrepreneur, a salesperson, or you may be that person who just feels like something else is calling to you, and it's time for a change. My mission is to provide stories that inspire us, so that when a surprise shows up and threatens to derail us, we will choose to persist. I will also provide practical skills, perspectives, and ideas that will help us create the habits of thriving and flourishing. Because at the end of the day, it is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Let's get right to today's episode. I think that you're going to love today's guest. He has multiple passion projects, including his podcasts, No Rain, No Rainbows, and The Modern Man, as well as being a news anchor at Fox Carolina. He is also very transparent and authentic about his journey in life. His name is Ted Fayton, and I cannot wait for you to meet him. So Ted, welcome to the show.
Bobby, thanks for having me.
I have been so looking forward to this interview since we last talked. And I thought, you know, would you just kick us off by introducing yourself a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Well, first, thank you for having me on the show and shout out to all the listeners. Thank you for sharing this space and this time. My name is Ted Fayton. By day or by morning, if you would, I'm a morning anchor for Fox Carolina and Greenville, South Carolina. My alarm goes off at 2:15 in the morning. I get that question a lot. Get to work by about 3:15 and I go after it. But my passion projects, really kind of what I feel like I'm on this planet for right now, is building my podcast, No Rain, No Rainbows, which you are so kind to be a guest on for me. Thank you so much. And also The Modern Man. It's a men's networking and empowerment group that I've been building out of Greenville, South Carolina, and just really focusing on connecting men in pursuit of their potential, really kind of building a culture of men trying to level up in their lives and show up as best as they can. So that's kind of what keeps me busy most of the time. I'm also a future husband, a dog dad, and a proud son.
Nice. Very nice. And I like how you called it your passion projects, right?
Yeah. My passion ambitions, if you would. I don't want to call them side hustles. I feel like that kind of diminishes it. Not to diminish anyone with a side hustle, but it's just kind of wanting to give it a little bit more oomph and more wind in the sails to kind of push it forward.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit about the No Rain, No Rainbows. Where did that come from, that saying?
Yeah. So No Rain, No Rainbows is, it's all about, you have to go through the hard times to get to the joy in life, right? Everybody wants the sunshine. They don't want the rain, but you need the pleasure. If you need the pain to get the pleasure, pretty much. And for me, that plaque came into my life after a very dark period. I mentioned ulcerative colitis was one of my diagnoses that I had earlier.
Yeah.
And pretty much for me, after being admitted to the hospital for 2 weeks at age 23, thinking I was going to lose my large intestine, I had to make a decision to kind of change my trajectory in life. Started thinking positive, started going after the kind of life I wanted to live. And there's more details we could unpack in the story. But when I finally got my first dream job to start executing meteorology, I was trying to furnish an apartment with these little trinkets.
Yeah. And
there was this plaque that just was in the corner, had some dust on it. Probably everybody walked by it. It just said, No Rain, No Rainbows. And for me, that immediately struck a chord with me for what I've just been through, what I was feeling. And that's really been my life motto ever since, to the point where when I had another kind of rough patch and I decided to start the podcast, it just struck like that life motto, that situation, that's probably what I would focus on moving forward. And that's what we do. We talk about overcoming hard times to live our best lives on the podcast.
Yeah, I love that. I love the no rain, no rainbows. I just think it's it kind of just captures it.
Yeah.
You know? And it was meant to be there for you, that little plaque in that store.
Yeah. And to be honest, that plaque is outside of my office right now where we're recording this. I'm sitting in my office. It's been with me ever since. I don't see it going anywhere anytime soon. So it's kind of just always a reminder. You know, I always, life's hard, but it's worth the squeeze. We got to go through yeah. that rain to get to our rainbows.
Yeah. I read something. Oh my God. I was in my mid 20s and I was going through kind of a dark place. Mm-hmm. And I just randomly picked up a book at a bookstore. And I took the afternoon off. I went to a park and I opened it up and it was Scott Peck's The Road Less Traveled. Mm-hmm. And the opening line is, life is hard. The sooner you accept it, the easier it becomes.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah. Cause up until then I thought, well, what am I doing wrong? That it feels like it's like it can sometimes be hard, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of that same thing. Like, hey, sometimes there's rain, sometimes there's dark clouds, but you just keep going.
Yeah.
You know, that was just important.
I've heard it described great. I think it was Les Brown who said, you're either in a storm, just left one, or heading into one.
I love him.
Yeah. And that's just, I mean, that's been the situation. It's like, you know, hey, I might be okay, but I know the clock's ticking on me.
Yeah, there's always something. So I know that you had a really, it seemed like a significant, event, if you will, mm-hmm. back when you were in college.
Yeah. So for me, I always start with expectations growing up. And I love my parents and the expectations they set moving forward. So I knew as when I first went into college, there were some pretty high expectations that I had to meet. Mm-hmm. Well, let's just say joining a fraternity, partying, not going to class, you get what you go for, right? After my freshman year of college, I had a 1.9 GPA. I used to hide that. I used to be ashamed of that. But now I say it proudly because I finally understood that was not a reflection of my intelligence. That was just a reflection of my effort. I wasn't there. I wasn't trying. So because I wasn't trying, I got the results that you would expect. But after my freshman year of college, I was with a few friends on a vacation, just trying to forget about how bad I've been doing in school, trying to figure out what my future is. And I see a bird kind of just dive into the water. And I start talking about, it comes out with the fish. I start talking about the tide. And my friend looks at me and says, how do you know all this stuff about like the science of weather and stuff? And I said, I've always loved weather. I've always just been a fan of that. And my friend looks at me, takes a sip of his drink and just goes, our school has a great meteorology program. And he just said that. And I looked at him and I was like, maybe I'll do that.
Yeah.
So that's when I decided, let me study meteorology. I go home, I pick all the classes and I sign up. I go into my sophomore year ready. And the first word out of the professor's mouth is, who's Ted Fate? And I'm like, oh, this is me. He's like, you're in the wrong class. So I sit through the whole class hearing gibberish of science and all this stuff that I had no idea what was going on. And then I go to his office afterwards. The professor's name was Mike Landon. And he told me, in order to even sit in the class that I was there, I had to go through physics one, physics two. Calculus one, two, all these things. And he's like, you have to do these prerequisites and you have to kind of go in this order. You're going to have to do 5 years. So I was like, you call my parents and tell them that because that's not acceptable. Again, high standard. So we kind of map it out where I would have to take physics one and two over the summer of my sophomore year. I couldn't get below a 3.0 in the physics, the calculus. Pretty much I had to pull my whole GPA up from a 1.9 to a 2.5 to get admitted into the major. Wow. Long story short, 3 years later, that same professor, Mike Landing, is telling the story about this kid who landed in one of his classes at 8:15 in the morning and 3 years later is accepting his diploma, that kid being me.
Wow.
I remember the students I'm graduating with because since then we catch up, we do all these other classes and things like that. But one of the kids, as we're getting ready to graduate, it was a pretty small major, maybe like 20, 30 kids. They're like, oh, I'm never going to forget this poor dude 3 years ago got called out at the beginning of the class. Like, we never saw him again. I'm like, yeah, you did. That dude was me.
Like, I didn't know. Oh my God, that's great.
For me, that was just kind of like, honestly, what changed for me in my college career in that story was somebody gave me a playbook. Somebody gave me an outline and something to execute. And I said, okay, I know what to do. I know where to go. I got it. And I think that was the first time like I really had that kind of like outline in front of me. And when I stuck to the playbook, it was kind of like a mentor, mentee, or a coach player type relationship where you gave me the playbook, I'm going to go execute. And it really panned out for both of us.
Nice. Yeah, the playbook. So speak more, like, what did that mean to you when you say it was a playbook?
When I signed up for the weather classes, for example, I just signed up for what looked good. I want to learn about the upper atmosphere. Yeah, I want to learn about the clouds and precipitation types. Yes. So I just signed up for a whole bunch of weather classes. But what he explained to me was, in order for me to understand how weather forms, I have to take, people think, okay, why do you have to take calculus, physics, and chemistry? Well, our atmosphere is made up of molecules. Understand the makeup of the atmosphere. Okay. So why do you have to understand physics? Because it moves around, and when it's moving, things happen. So why do you have to understand calculus? Because you want to forecast and predict what happens, you're going to have to calculate the movement. So those small increments, those prerequisites that I had to learn that I had no interest in, was necessary for me to get to the level of understanding that I wanted for something that I like, something that, that I had a little bit of an interest in. And I know a lot of people start with, oh, follow your passion. I started with an interest in weather. I didn't have a passion for weather. I had an interest. And then he gave me the things that I should study. And I was like, I don't like calculus. I don't like physics. But when I learned it and I learned how to apply it to what I like, it became interesting. And then I had a better understanding of it. And then suddenly an interest in weather becomes a passion in weather, and something I would sit down and talk hours with classmates.
Yeah.
So that kind of developed as I followed the guidance in front of me of the fundamentals that kind of played into the bigger mechanisms of how things operated.
Yeah. I love that too. Because we always do hear that, you know, follow your passion. And then it's like, well, what if I don't have a passion? Then what? But I like that. I heard someone say it, you know, follow your energy. And like you say, an interest, right? And sometimes that can lead us there. So now, he originally said it was going to take you 5 years, right?
Yes. So when he said 5 years, I would have to do 5 years. So I finished my freshman year. I was going into my second, and he would say, in order to do the major, I would have to do 5 years total instead of a 4-year degree.
Yeah.
And I said, nope. I said, I'm going to school for 4 years. That's not an option. We need to graduate in 4 years. This is my window. So we did a kind of a ramped up process by kind of skipping my sophomore summer and just going hard in it, hard in the paint.
Yeah. But you did it in 4 years.
Yeah. Did it in 4 years, graduated. And I mean, I was thankful because not only did I catch up with the coursework by my senior year, it was funny. You know how seniors kind of like, oh, take the classes that you just want to. I actually still have the textbook behind me, like Climate 101, because I had to just get 3 more credits. And I actually, not only did I, because now I'm an upperclassman, but that 101 was kind of an entry class for other people. And it was just a way for me to broaden my understanding, because I was kind of really focused on kind of like mesoscale or microscale meteorology. This is kind of climate over the course of longer time. So I started tutoring the younger classmen.
Really?
Because I had extra time on my hands. So I was able to kind of pay forward and reciprocate, and kind of like how a lot of things work. You pour into somebody else, they pour into you, and then you pour into the next person.
Yeah. Which is always a great feeling.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So besides the playbook, you know, I guess what were your main learnings from that experience, your main takeaways?
Kind of like what I was saying with, it wasn't a reflection of my intelligence. It was my effort.
Yeah.
I think at the time I was performing how I thought I would be able to perform. I think I had a 1.9 GPA mentality. I didn't have the mentality that I was capable of getting a 3.0 GPA. I never identified myself as that. I was working in what I thought I was. I took on an identity quick in college of, you know, the life of the party, always having a good time. Where's the action at? Ted's coming.
And yeah.
That was a fun identity to have, but it wasn't practical. It wasn't sustainable. And at some point in time, there was responsibilities that you had to take care of. So what I started learning was I can change my identity where I still like to have a good time. I still would be active with a lot of friends, but I realized I just like socializing with people. I found one atmosphere to do it. But by the time I was in a senior, I was the treasurer of my club volleyball team. We had an intramural dodgeball team. After that, I was in the fraternity. I was doing the fundraising chair. I hosted a charity fashion show, raised $2,500 for breast cancer. So I'm doing all these things because I'm learning, like, that's how I interact with people.
Yeah.
So I just had to find more of a self-serving way to execute that passion of connecting with people. I like to stay active. I like to do things. And, you know, there's a fork in the road in how we can apply it. There's a lot of people who have passions in life. Some would call it addiction in other areas, right? But what's the difference between the passion and the addiction? Is it the outcome it has on our body and our lives? Is it serving us or is it not serving us? I have a joke with my friends, and even things that serve you can be an addiction, but a joke with my friends where it's in the summer, my friend sent a hot dog and I was like, those carbs aren't serving you. And they're laughing, but it's like, hey, you want to be on a diet. You understand what you're doing to yourself, right? Not saying you don't indulge, but some of the behaviors that we do can either help us in life or deteriorate our ability to execute the things we really want to do.
Yeah.
Empty indulgences, if that makes sense.
Makes perfect sense. And I love that distinction between the passion and the addictions. And what I also like there is that you didn't give up what was important to you. Because like social and community is really important to you. I mean, I can see that in the different things that you write and in your story there. So it's just like, how do I basically channel it maybe?
Yeah. And it's a thing about self-help. A lot of what I focus on is kind of taking care of ourselves. And I think as humans, we are social beings. We love to, you know, socialize with other people. That's why public speaking is such a huge fear. We're not afraid to be in front of a bunch of people. We're afraid of being rejected by people. So it's not a fear of people. It's a fear of rejection, but just magnified because you're literally giving X amount of people, whether it's 5 people or 100,000 people, you're giving them all an opportunity to reject you at once. So it's a single fear that just gets magnetized. So I think when we realize that, okay, we have this instinctual desire to be accepted, to be part of a community, part of a family, part of a group, we all just want that connection, right? Especially when we're talking 2021, coming towards the end of the pandemic where we've had to socially distance and everything. And, you know, thank God for technology like FaceTime to help close the gap. But we really all want connection. We all want to be with each other. So where do you find the community and your passion? You have groups online that talk about teapots. And I know this is a real thing because my fiance sold a teapot to someone who was a teapot collector. But there's a community online for people who love teapots. And I use that as an elaborate example as to whatever it is you're passionate about, whatever thing it is you're interested about that you want to develop into a passion. There's a community out there talking about it, growing with it. And that's where you can find your place, right? Yeah. We all want to find our place. It's out there.
Yeah.
We just got to look for it.
Yeah, I love the teapot. So, okay, I'm going to chuckle about that one for a while because when you came up with it, I'm like, man, that is random. But no, it's not as random as it seems. But yeah, we all do want to belong, right? I mean, it's just this, it is a human need that we all have and it's powerful. So, well, tell me, shifting gears, you mentioned it a little bit when you're 23, your hospital stay, that seemed like a real turning point in your life.
Yeah. So that came up towards the end after I graduated college, right? Yeah, got my degree. I did this huge undertaking and I felt great about myself. But for anyone who is familiar with the 2008, 2010 period, it was kind of rough getting jobs coming out of college. So I worked at a law firm and I just wasn't built for a cubicle. It was a great job, very supportive, just wasn't well fit for me. So I kind of fell into a dark place, just very miserable, upset. My diet would consist of McDonald's. Like, Bobby, I'd say at least 3 times a week, 20-piece chicken nuggets, large fry, and a large sweet tea from McDonald's. Yes, please. And I'd go home. I lived with my parents at the time, and they would have a beautiful, nourish, like, very good cooked meal, and I wouldn't eat it. I would just go and I'd eat my McDonald's. Long story short, started having stomach problems and ended up in the hospital, diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. It's an autoimmune disease similar to Crohn's. I'll spare the listeners the gross details, but just knowing that stress and diet were 2 major factors into what led to the deterioration. So when the doctor asked me, what's your stress levels like? I told him I was very stressed at work and at home and on my own. He said, well, what's your diet like? Well, I was not eating well at all. And I was in a realm of blaming everyone for my problems. But when the doctor kind of put that mirror in front of me, I had nobody else but to blame but myself. So there I am, laying on a hospital bed, morphine dripping down the IV, easing my pain, thinking I'm going to lose my large intestine because the surgeon says if we don't like our next CAT scan, we're taking it out. And I'm only 23.
Oh, man.
That forced me to take a good, long, hard look at myself. I remember deciding to kind of be positive, focus on the good, you know, appreciate things more and not get so, I mean, that put a lot of things into perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
How bad was my life really? I had a job. I had a roof over my head. I might not have been where I wanted to be yet, but that doesn't mean I can't go towards there. So by the time I was, by the next day, they did a CAT scan. The inflammation went down. They eased up off the morphine. They eased up off the prednisone. And I was out of the hospital a few days later. I remember driving down that same road. I've driven down 100 times, but it looked different. It looked different coming home from the hospital. So, I mean, it looked different. The road was different. Nothing changed. I did. So I was down that road. And then about a month and a half later, I was on top of a mountain snowboarding. About 6 months later, I kind of made another shift, left the relationship I was in at the time, and decided to focus on three major aspects of my life I wanted to fix. I didn't want to live at home with my parents anymore. I wasn't happy with the amount of money I was making, and I wasn't happy with my job. 6 months after that, so now we're about a year after I left the hospital, accepting a job for my dream job to go to the Saginaw to start my 1 year shot at this meteorologist thing. And again, that's what led me to the No Rain, No Rainbows plate. That's why that story for me was after I got out of the hospital and kind of changed things around within a year. Within mm-hmm. a year, I was able to check all those things off. That might sound like a long time for some listeners, but it really wasn't, because your head's down, you're doing things. You'd be shocked at how fast time goes. A year feels like a long time, but a decade's a lot longer. And I'm never going to forget when I heard we overestimate what we can accomplish in a year, but grossly underestimate what we can do in a decade.
That's right.
So it was just
that's
kind
so
of
right.
Shifting that kind of put me on this trajectory.
Yeah. And you know what? I love that you mentioned, you know, a year might sound like a long time, and it does, but if you think about it, like you're going to be a year older either way, at least get started in that direction. Mm-hmm. And I could see it when you're talking about, you know, driving down the same road that you, you know, but it looked different, you know, and you said you changed. So how did you go about, because taking responsibility for yourself, right? That's not always easy. So we have those mirror moments in life, and sometimes we just turn and walk the other way, you mm-hmm. know? So how did you embrace that, and how did you make those changes?
That's an awesome question. I don't know if anyone's asked me like that specific execution. So I'm going to unpack it and reflect out loud.
Okay.
I think I was in a point where I had hit rock bottom. I really just saw kind of what I was doing, where it was leading, and it didn't have any direction. And it was kind of like staring at two roads, and I'm like, okay, that is not going where I want to go. Over here is where I want to go. But here's the reality about it. You have this beautiful paved road to the right, but at the end, it's, you don't really like where it leads. Mm-hmm. But on your left, you have this beautiful view just on the side of these thorny rose bushes.
Yeah.
Some people don't want to walk through those thorns.
No.
They're like, I'm just going to walk down this road and just take what I get. You know. But for me, I think I was already down that road and I came back from it. And I think being in the hospital allowed me to kind of reset. And coming out of the hospital, going down that same road, I think it was like, I went down that road. I didn't like what was on the other end.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, that road has thorns on it. But what they don't tell you about the first road is that road hurts too.
Yeah.
You know, that road hurts because you're not where you want to be. So I could either get hurt on my way to where I want to be, or I could be hurt because I'm not there. But either way, it's going to hurt. The thorns
That's
are
right.
at the beginning of the trail or at the end.
Yeah.
Let me just get it over with.
Yeah. At least be going where you want to go.
Yeah.
You know, they hurt in different ways, but I frankly think the other road, the road that looks better, but the thorns are at the end. Mm-hmm. I think that actually hurts more.
Probably.
You know,
because you can't undo that hurt.
No, no. And then that leads to so many regrets, you know, at some point in your life where you're like, and I know we've heard this so many times, so many different ways, but we tend to regret the things we don't do more than the things we do. Yeah. Maybe there's something about the age of 23, because that's when I had my big epiphany too. but it was, you know, just like what you said, I think I was at that point where this is so bad, I have to try something else.
Yeah.
You know,
and I think something we have in common there, and it might be 23. And I've heard a lot of stories with people in their 20s. And a lot of times it is health related, because I mean, I could tell you're a high performer. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of listeners who need to hear that they're high performers also, but they might not have been high performing at the things that they've wanted to. You know, for me, and not proud of it, but you know, it's hard to leave the club scene and the nightlife scene when you're good at it.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
I was popular. Every time I went out, everybody knew my name and the life of the party. Like, I could still go out now and have a great time, but it's hard to quit something you're good at. And there's a lot of people who are high performers in something that's not serving them. That's kind of why I went back with the, like, you know, it wasn't an addiction. It's just, I liked people. I liked interacting with people. Where are they? They're at the bar. Let's go. You know?
Yeah.
Now it's like, hey, I like people. Where are they? They're at the Zoom meeting. They're at the growth conference. But I'm still going to the people.
That's right.
Going down a different path.
Yeah, I love that. And you're so right, man. It is, when you're really, really good at something, it's hard to walk away.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes that becomes a prison.
Yeah.
In its own way. Golden handcuffs.
I've been going through a revelation recently, and maybe your listeners could relate to this, about career choices and career paths. And I remember I was talking to a friend, and he's graduating college, and he's talking, he's like, do I really need to do this for the rest of my life? And I'm like, you know, I grew up with that same mentality. Our parents grew up with is this what you want to do for the rest of your life? And we even ask that to this day. What's something you want to do for the rest of your life? Well, does it have to be that? Does it have to be a life sentence?
Yeah.
Like, college was 4.5 years. That was a great experience. I don't need more than that. You know, maybe this career choice is the next decade. Like, that's kind of how I'm starting to reshape things, right? I'm trying to think, maybe as I'm building my vision board and trying to plan for the next five years, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Honestly, I always see myself growing and doing something different. And one thing I've known about myself since I can remember, the countless jobs I've worked, from being a carnival, well, not a carny, but I worked at an amusement park. I've moved mattresses. I've tested video games. I've landscaped, which was one of my favorite jobs, by the way. I worked as a billing clerk. I've done all these different things because I get bored if I do the same thing for too long.
Yeah.
And it's okay to get bored. But how do those skills, those previous skills, transition over to other areas of life? Working as a billing clerk at the law firm has been very helpful for a lot of understanding and applications in my job now. I just didn't recognize the benefits of those skills until I found somewhere else to apply them that served me. Again, going back to learning physics and learning calculus. I don't want to learn them. But when you apply it to weather, I'll open up that book.
That's right. Because it's something that you're interested in.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, you're absolutely right there, Ted, because I think we do that. Well, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? I don't know. If you asked me, what do you want to eat for the rest of your life? I don't know. You know, yeah. I don't know. But to find the similarities or the skills, you know, that are transferable, I think we'd be better off if we didn't put that heaviness on it. Cause then it's like, it's such a weight.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be this lifelong commitment. Just, hey, again, what are you interested in right now? What do you think you could be really good at? What do you think you can give to the world? And if you give it to the world for 10 years, that's good enough.
Yeah.
You know? Maybe. Transition. Michael Strahan had a great career as a football player. Now people who know him, more people that know him now, I venture the people who know him now, a majority of his fan base know him as a TV commentator, not as a football player.
Yeah.
He's amazing. He's not locked into that. He's great.
Yeah. So
we can all redefine ourselves. We don't have to commit to something for the rest of our lives. Like, this is it.
You never get to do anything else. Never. Oh my goodness. It's so funny you mentioned Michael Strahan. I watched there was a Football Life on him. And I love that show anyway. And they were talking about, like, you can just see the joy that seems to come out of him. Like, when he just seems to love what he's doing, but he's not locked into, I have to do this, or I have to, you know, he's not even a football commentator, right? I mean, he's amazing. On the Football Life, there's a picture of him riding the bike that he bought when he was like 12, and it's so tiny for him. It was, but he had this big smile on his face. I'm like, you just have to like that.
Forever being a kid.
That's right. You got to love it, you know? So now with that in mind, you made a shift recently to Morning Anchor, right?
Yes. That was about 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago. I actually want to say just recently, now I've been an anchor longer than I've been a meteorologist.
Really?
Yeah. And kind of talking about reinventing ourselves. If you were to ask high school Ted, even freshman year college Ted, if you were to ask him what he was going to be when he grew up, I would not have told you meteorologist. 4 years ago, even 4.5 years ago, if you were to ask me how, if I'll ever be an anchor, I probably would have told you no.
Really?
As recently as 4.5, that was not an ambition of mine. It wasn't a focus of mine. It wasn't, I didn't become a meteorologist thinking like, oh, I can't wait to get to the anchor desk. I became a meteorologist because there was the love of the weather. Mm-hmm. Now the opportunity to anchor came about and it scared me, Bobby.
Really?
It scared me. I was a kid in high school that was, I would pre-read the paragraphs because when you'd have to read out loud,
yes,
I'd pre-read the paragraph so I wouldn't stutter through the paragraph. But then someone else in class would be an overachiever, read two paragraphs, throw me off, and then I'd have a hard time reading the paragraph out loud. Like that was me.
Yeah.
I was terrified of reading out loud. But I knew that was a weakness of mine. I had to work on it if I wanted to reach my dream, which has been to have my own show one day. Mm. Have my own show one day. Well, a lot of those people read prompter. You should probably learn how to read prompter.
Yeah.
So I took that jump, started anchoring. It was a bit of a rough start. It was a hard skill to learn, especially when you're learning it in front of so many people. If any of your listeners were in the Greenville, South Carolina area when I was first anchoring and put up with me, thank you so much. Because it did allow me to have another shift in life of changing trajectory, kind of dealing with some doubt along the way. I mean, there were some times I was like, did I ruin my whole career making this jump?
Oh,
I have really done this? When, you know, all these things going through your head. But then you finally get the hang of it. You finally, you know, get your roots planted and you start getting the rhythm and you understand how the fundamentals of this new position works and you're getting better. And now you start having some confidence to the point where, okay, you understand the rules. Now you get to break them a little bit and you get to have a little bit more fun. The interest then becomes the passion. And then you start building your style. So that's been the journey there of, again, talking back about the renewal of, hey, I can actually, if I could do this from in college wanting to be a computer engineer to meteorology and from meteorology to now anchoring, you know, the world is our oyster. It's just about, okay, there's going to, and what I found, there's usually a 3 to 4 year true learning curve. I mean, you can learn something quick, but if you want to get to a point of actually performing at a noticeable level, it usually took me about 3 to 4 years to get to a level where people are like, oh, you're pretty good at this.
Yeah.
Maybe my timeline's slower than others. Maybe it's faster than others. I think everybody's different. But for me, I understand if I were to try something new right now, it would probably take me about 3 to 4 years before I really get the momentum and the groove the way I really want it to be.
Yeah. So, okay, that's really interesting. And it triggers more questions for me, of course.
Yeah.
Because part of that is leaving something that you're already good at, you know?
Correct.
Being willing to step out there. So I guess my first question goes to, it takes courage to do that. Where does that, you know, how do you decide to move through that anyway?
So I think my main motivator, if I'm being honest, is I get bored.
Okay.
I think the courage comes from, just not wanting to be stagnant.
Okay.
And having, I think that's always kind of something I think about, like, okay, am I doing the same thing? Am I stagnant? I want to change environments. And I say that because a lot of people resist change. I get excited for change. Like, I want something new. Like,
yeah, what's
door number two? I'm done with door number one, Alex.
I love that. Yeah. Oh, man. Because I'm the same way. I just like it when people are like that.
Yeah. But I think because it's reshaping our thinking of change. So for me, when I see change or something new, I just see possibilities. And my mind goes 100 million miles an hour. And like, I wish I was more focused in playing chess because they see all the moves ahead. And like, I feel like that's what I do with life. Like, it's like, what do you want for dinner today? And it's like, okay, get a salad. Well, if I get a salad tonight and I keep getting the salad, I could have a six pack by the time it's summer. Or if I eat this burger and I keep going. So I play all these different possibilities and the moves in my head with change. And I love opportunities. I love something that's fresh and new. And for me, I guess the courage is the fact that I haven't associated change with a bad thing. I've actually associated it with a very positive thing and an exciting thing. I'm constantly in a realm and a mentality of imposter syndrome. Like even right now, like I'll be honest with you and the listeners, like I hope I'm doing a good job right now. I hope I'm articulating well, and I hope I'm like captivating and exciting, because I'm like, I don't want to, you know, be exposed, if you would, because I'm always in a state of imposter syndrome, doing things that make me feel uncomfortable because my heart rate increases a little bit and that makes me know I'm alive and it makes me kind of hyper aware in the situation. So it's been reframing. So I would say the courage comes from doing it scared. You need the fear to be courageous. And when your heart rate increases and you start having a little bit more numbness happening around your body, those are just little indications that you're alive, you're here, and enjoy it.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And that kind of, my second question, I think you probably answered it there, is when you think about, oh, it's going to take me 3 years or whatever that time frame is for someone. Because some, you know, I've heard people say, oh, I want to learn how to play the piano. And they give it like a week. It's probably not going to happen in a week, you know? And so I was going to ask you about how do you have the patience for that? But it's probably tied to what you're saying there.
Yeah. So I'm very impatient. I'm very impatient. I'm always thinking I should be 3-5 years ahead from where I am.
Oh, yeah.
And I have done a lot of work to kind of appreciate where I am and really stay present. But I think the patience comes from stubbornness, if I'm being honest.
Okay.
I think I'm a very stubborn person, and I'm the kind of person where, like, you know, I want something to work. And if I decide I'm going to do something, it usually isn't a quick decision. Like I usually don't make like big decisions, like switching my career from meteorology to anchoring. I usually don't make that decision quickly. I take some time to decide it. But when I make the decision, I kind of commit. Like when I'm sitting there, like, did I ruin my career? Because I'm committed to seeing out what I started.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to back out halfway, because I probably could have if I really wanted to. When I was in the thick of it and I'm thinking like, oh man, this is not for me. I'm not getting it. I should be getting it by now. I still have an opportunity to maybe get, I mean, it would have had some issues contractually probably, but if I wanted to, there probably would have been the option to back out and just let it go where it is. But I made the decision to do it and I stayed committed to it. And I was stubborn, sometimes to a fault, but that stubbornness, like people have told me, they're like, man, like, you know how funny it is, and I've had a couple people tell me this. Like, you know, when you started, I didn't think it'd last long, but you're still going.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, well, yeah, because I said I'm going to do it. So I think just being committed and stubborn. Mm-hmm. And when I say stubborn, I still try. I pay attention to metrics. I'm not blindly stubborn. If something's not working, I don't stick with it. If it's just kind of doing more harm than good, I abandon it quick. But if there's growth, if there's progress, even just a little bit, 1% a day is 365% a year. And that's some pretty good growth.
That's right. That's right. You know, and I think the commitment, that's a huge deal. And, you know, sometimes it takes a while and that's okay. You know?
Yeah.
So there's one thing I'm dying to ask you about. And then I want to talk about your podcast a little bit. The article that you have on LinkedIn about, you know, when you were 23, you talked about, you said, I remember the first time I said the words, I'm not okay. And you talked about the weight that was lifted off of you. And then there's a line you use shortly after that where you said, I realize that a suit of armor with no dents has never been to battle. And I thought that is such a great word picture. Can you tell me more about that?
Yeah. I think it plays into a lot of what I do with Modern Man. And like for me, you know, even through the ulcerative colitis and a lot of things, I mean, a lot of us pay more attention to mental health now, but it wasn't always talked about. And I know for me, I've kind of battled things internally and silently. And that also was kind of what triggered me into the hospital. So I remember when I was kind of like in an instance of not being okay, I believe I was with my friend Dave, and it was actually a night out, and we were just kind of hanging out. And I realized, like, I was like, you know, I am dependent on the people around me. Like, I realized I'm afraid to be alone. Like, I wouldn't like being at home by myself. So that's why I always went out and about. And that's why I always kind of reached out and gravitated, because I was dependent on them. I needed them. But then you had the realization where, how can you be surrounded by so many people and still feel lonely?
Yeah.
That's, you know, because I wasn't painful. Connecting. Yeah. It's because I wasn't connecting with them, you know, and I could be mad at some people for, like, how do they not know how do they not know that I'm not okay? Well, you didn't tell them.
What are the odds?
I always say I'm one of the most oblivious people on earth. Like, you're gonna have to give it to me plain for me to understand it. You know, we always like, oh, you didn't pick up on the hints. Like, you didn't pick up on the hints. You had to call me twice. I'm like, no, I just thought you were busy the first time I called you. A lot of times people don't know to pick up the hints that we're leaving, that we're not okay. Mm-hmm. And then we're struggling because we're like, oh, we don't feel understood because they don't know that I'm not okay. And sometimes you have those intuitive friends, but this is also why deep relationships have been helpful, because those intuitive friends will know when your energy is off and they'll check on you. Like, hey, you okay? Mm-hmm. But I didn't have those connections. So when I was like, okay, I'm not okay, it was the first time I was able to maybe talk to somebody and let them know, like, hey, listen, man, I know we have a lot of fun, but today can we just sit down, chill, like, watch some TV, just get my mind off some stuff. You know, I'm working through some things. And the funniest thing is when I started talking about problems, and they can range from relationship, trying to overcome a breakup, not being where I want, not working a job I wanted to work and feeling overworked. It could be kind of having financial problems. Not too long ago, when at that time, I was in credit card debt, having struggles with that. But we hold on to these, thinking that these are our own problems. But when I start talking, I'm like, yeah, man, I'm having some problems with, you know, keep my credit cards in line. Oh, dude, I had the same problem. This is how I went, paid it down. Get this book. This dude's going to teach you how to yada, yada. I'm like, oh. That's a cheat code. Tell people what my problems are.
I love that, because someone's been through it.
Yeah.
The answer's out there.
Yeah. So my problems are not my own. That was the biggest thing. It's like, when I finally was like, hey, I'm not okay, I realized my problems are not my own. And people are not only willing to help, they're hoping to help, because they've been through the storm you've been through. They know exactly what it feels like to get rained on, for how long you're getting rained on. And they're going to reach out and say, hey, here's the floodlight so you can see the roadway and get out of this storm, because I've been there. Come on. I mean, there's more storms ahead, but let's get out of this one.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love that. I love the cheat card. That's fabulous. Because other people, they do want to help, you know, but sometimes we have to be vulnerable and say, I need the help. You know, if we've always got the wall up, it's not surprising that no one shows up to help.
Yeah.
You don't know.
We talk about vulnerability a lot, and someone's like, you know, well, how do you have these deep relationships, and how can you, you know, tap into vulnerability? It's like, well, someone has to go first.
Like, it's that simple.
Might as well be you, you know, and you find, like, people respond to trust with trust.
Mm-hmm.
You know, anyone who has a massive following probably is because, you know, they exude something that people trust in them. That's why some of the biggest brands, they'll pay Michael Jordan to be on the side of a sneaker, because they trust Michael Jordan's work ethic and maybe his standards. They trust what he's accomplished, and these sneakers stand by that same value. So they're going to trust that sneaker with his logo on it.
Yeah.
You know,
so he's still doing commercials. How many years after he retired from playing the game of basketball?
Yeah.
I mean, it's been a couple decades, you know?
It has been.
and I grew up
Michael
in the
Jordan's one where it's like, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? You're going to be known as a basketball player for the rest of your life. Sorry, Michael.
He's always going to be MJ, you know?
Yeah.
Man. So tell us more about the two podcasts. Because I know these are passion projects for you.
Yeah. And my passion projects, because again, I like people. And when someone says, what do you want to do for the rest of your life? What I always have done is talk. And I always love connecting with people. So the No Rain, No Rainbows podcast is literally that, connecting with people who have either gone through or reached a certain level of fulfillment in their lives. And they just want to share some of their experiences. We talk about success stories. We talk about adversity, business, and different tactics we can use to navigate some hardships in our lives. So No Rain, No Rainbows is just really kind of focused on that. Really, the niche is we're a self-development, entrepreneurial, mental health awareness podcast. So that's kind of what we focus on. A sub-series of that was The Modern Man. It was just me and a couple of business owners, again, wanting to come together. I had the idea of men having these real relationships because I saw the value of that. I also read a couple of books, which really opened my eyes up to the suicide rate amongst middle-aged men and just men in general, and how male isolation is an issue, and understanding that, hey, okay, again, our problems are not our own. So maybe I can create something that can help build camaraderie amongst men and help men have conversations about how they can be better in life. So that's what Modern Man really is. It's a huge umbrella of us putting on events, putting out content, having discussions, and just building an infrastructure where like-minded men can come together, talk about empowerment, growth, and build a well before they're thirsty, build those relationships before they're in a situation where they need them.
Yeah. So
those are the two passion projects that I work on when I'm not waking up at 2:15 a.m.
I was going to say, 2:15, man, that is early.
Oh, yeah, it is, but you don't get used to it. People always ask, you ever get used to that? No, it's not real.
It's not. But you must love what you're doing, though, in order to do it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, again, as if 4.5 hours each morning talking on air is not enough, I continue to do these podcasts and other things, conversations. I've found what I resonate in, and I lean into that and try and execute it as best as I can.
That's really cool. And so final question. Let me think. If someone is feeling, I don't know, if you want to say stuck or hopeless, whatever it was you were feeling back in when you were 23, if someone's in that spot, what is one piece of advice that you'd have for them?
Move. And when I say move, we always think some people work in the fact that they need a whole plan before they can go forward. Some people work in the fact that they don't want to move because they don't want to go in the wrong direction, or they're afraid of if they go in the right direction, can they sustain what they're going to do? We're always kind of feeling in this sense of where I was, I felt lost. And I equate it to, you're in a dark room, pitch black. You're in the middle of the room and you don't know where to do. You don't know what to do. You don't know where to go. You don't know where you are. And what I say is just put your hands out in front of you and take a couple steps forward. Eventually you're going to hit a wall. And what do? Just feel your way around the wall, go in one direction. And eventually you feel a door. You don't know where it leads, but open the door and open that. You might see a little ray of sunshine on the bottom. You might see a little bit of a brighter light. Who knows? But you're not where you were before. And for me, I've just been convinced, again, focused on opportunities and everything out there. Would you rather stay standing in that small, dark room without knowing where you are? Or would you rather be in another room, in another room, and have the possibility that, sure, that door might lead to another dark room, but what if that door has some sunlight? Mm-hmm. What if that door reveals a little bit more of a path for you to go down? And a lot of times when we follow these leaders, it's not that they know where to go. It's just they're feeling their way through the wall first. And they find that beautiful thing before we did. But we follow them because they trust their path so much. They trust what they're doing so much. We trust them. And it leads us out of the dark room where we are.
Yeah. That's a really good metaphor and a great way to look at it. Got to move. Got to do something. So Ted, thank you so much. And I forgot to ask you before, where can people reach you? Where can people find you?
So I'm very active on Instagram. It's funny because we talked about Instagram being active beforehand. So that's why the tag is The Real Phaeton Forecast. That's Phaeton, the number 4KAST. Also, my podcast, No Rain, No Rainbows, lives on the website, phaetonforecast.com. And you can find all my links through there as well. And for The Modern Man, if you just search themodernmanshow.com, there's that. And we're The Modern Man Show on all social media platforms. So pretty easy to find. Yeah, I'd love any of the listeners that resonated with something I said, reach out to me on Instagram, DMs. That's usually the best way, or LinkedIn. And I'd be happy to kind of keep the dialogue going.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much for spending time with us and sharing your energy and your light and just your presence. I just love talking with you.
Likewise. And this was a lot of fun, as I expected, because always love having the opportunity to exchange and talk about things.
Yeah. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. I know that I did. I always love talking with Ted. So here are my three insights for thriving. One, I loved it when he said that his GPA was not a reflection of his intellect, but rather of his effort. I think that sometimes we mistake our current performance for our true potential. And our present performance, it's just where we are right now. It in no way determines where we can go. Number two, follow your interests and develop those, and your passions may unfold. Sometimes we put such pressure on ourselves to follow our passions, which is great when we know what our passions are, but sometimes we just need to take a couple of steps back and say, what interests us? What intrigues us? What gives us energy? And something I found really interesting about Ted's story is, you know, following his interest also led him to study things that maybe he wasn't that interested in, except it was driven by the overarching topic, you know, of meteorology. And then finally, number three, use your cheat card. If you are experiencing a problem or a challenge or a dark spot or whatever that might be, share it with someone. Reach out. There are people who have solved these problems. We don't have to do it alone. People want to help. So, and I have to say, it was really hard for me to just choose three insights, and I'm sure that you've got your own. Shifting gears a bit, we are busy building a course to be ready late spring of this year, 2021. It's called Start Your Future Today, and we are excited to offer it because it brings together our experience over the last 20 plus years in creating the life that we love to live every day. So if you've ever found yourself saying, is this it? Is this all there is? Or if you found yourself saying, you know, things are pretty good, but I wonder if there's something more. Or maybe you found yourself saying, I want to live more than just 2 weeks a year when I'm on vacation. I want more than that. Then this course could be for you. In it, you'll learn things like how to describe the future that you want that is both inspiring and motivating. Also, how to start moving towards that exciting future. And finally, if you choose, you can submit your story to me for feedback on what potential next steps might be. So this course will help you jumpstart the next chapter of your life. For a limited time, we're giving away scholarships to this course. And here's how you can enter to win. There are four easy steps. Number one, subscribe to the podcast on Apple or wherever you listen to podcasts. Number two, leave a review for the podcast. Three, take a screenshot of that review. And then finally, number four, email your screenshot to hello@unyielded.net with the subject Start Program. And we will select five lucky winners over the next month to receive a scholarship for the course. And I just finally want to say thank you so much for tuning in to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. We love sharing stories here. We love sharing the positive message because at the end of the day, this is all about providing hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. Because I truly believe that we can all create our lives, craft our lives in such a way that we can love our lives every single day.